You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
I'm a little sad today.
I know.
Since our last episode in this series, but I doubt it's our last episode with Dr. McKenzie helping us learn some great history. We are taking a look at the history of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and our guest for this series, Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which he has made very clear was the first seminary of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Not the oldest seminary in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, but the first Missouri Synod seminary. Dr. McKenzie, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
Well, thank you for having me, and I appreciate the little bit of a plug for Fort Wayne. Thank you.
We are so interested in learning more about what happened after that first convention as the Missouri Synod continued to grow and some of the early work of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which we know it was not called the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at that time, but the German Evangelical Lutheran Church of, or Synod of Missouri, Ohio, and other states. I can't believe we dropped that really interesting part called other states.
What were we even thinking?
Why we dropped that, I don't know. Makes it more interesting that way. So let's talk a little bit about the relationship of this synod to other synods in North America. How did Missouri position itself in the midst of all these other synods that were happening in North America?
Well, the Missouri Synod positions itself as a Lutheran synod defined by its commitment to the scriptures and the Lutheran confessions. And that's right there is going to distinguish the synod from a lot of other synods that we've already talked about in connection with the founders of synod. However, there were some other confessional Lutherans in the United States by this time. And with these, Missouri has kind of a mixed kind of interaction. Sometimes hostile, but otherwise not so. And there are at least a couple of them. And the one that we'll talk about first, and maybe it's the only one we'll be able to get into in this episode, is a group of confessional Lutherans, basically from the state of Prussia, that big German country at this time that was kind of the dominant power, especially in the northern parts of Germany. That's also the place where the king had said, all right, I want all you Protestants together, Reformed and Lutheran, in one church, the Union Church. And as a result of that, some Lutherans said, no, we're not doing this. And when the pressure became intense, they ended up leaving Prussia and coming to the United States and forming their own synod. In fact, they did it a couple of years before the Missouri Synod in 1845. Those pastors and their congregations formed a confessional Lutheran synod. They did it in Milwaukee. That's where they met. But their nickname became the Buffalo Synod. And that was simply because their leader and their principal institutions were located in Buffalo, New York. So they were founded in 1845. That's a couple years prior to the Missouri Synod. Now, the Prussian Lutherans were not strangers to the Saxon Lutherans, even back in the old country, before either group had left for America. The Prussians had a couple of pastors. Well, there were actually two different groups. There was a larger group, which were really technically the Prussians. And their leader was a fellow by the name of Grabau, Johannes Andreas August Grabau. And he had been a pastor in the state church of Prussia. He had refused to accept the Prussian Union. He had therefore lost his position. He had actually been in prison for a time on account of his confessionalism, and finally decided and then obtained permission from state authorities to leave Prussia and go to America. And there were several hundred people who were interested in maintaining their confessionalism along with Grabau. And so they left. And they come almost exactly at the same time as the Saxons. Maybe a little bit later, but by 1839, they are here too. Now, there was another group that actually ended up going with them. This was a group led by a pastor, Krause, Leberecht, F.E. Krause, and his congregation were from the part of Germany known as Silesia. It's a separate territorial unit, but by this time, it's a part of the greater Prussian state. And they didn't have a lot of resources. There are a couple hundred of them, but they're looking to leave. And so are the Saxons looking to leave, and so are the Prussians looking to leave. And Krause kind of links up with the Prussians. But before making that decision, his congregation, or maybe he, influencing his congregation, goes off to the United States just to check it out. So while his congregation of Silesians is back in Prussia, waiting for Pastor Krause to come back, he's in the United States seeing if he thinks this would be a good place for them. He leaves them under the pastoral care of Pastor Grabo. And while Pastor Krause is gone, something bad takes place. And again, the details, I'm a little uncertain on the details. But apparently, one of the leaders of the Silesians started talking to ship owners and ship captains about what it would cost to go here or to go there. And one of the places to which some of these good confessional Lutherans ended up going at this time was Australia. And this leader of the Silesians struck a deal with the ship captain to Australia. Okay, so that's where they're supposed to be going. But when this was basically brought to the attention of the rest of the Silesians, they said, no, we don't want to go to Australia. We want to go to America with the Prussians. And so they broke their deal with the Australian ship captain. This led to, I don't know what the ship captain did, but Pastor Grabo thought that the Silesians had acted unethically. And so he began disciplining the Silesians that Krause had entrusted to his pastoral care. Yeah. And so when they left, they had hired a number of vessels to go to America. The Silesians are kind of going already under discipline by Pastor Grabo. When they get to America, Pastor Krause is still there. And Pastor Krause meets them. And a week later, he goes back to Germany. He didn't want to be in the United States, didn't like the United States, so he leaves them. Meanwhile, the members of this, and they don't all get there at the same time. They're in different boats. But they get to Buffalo, and some of the number move on to Wisconsin. So you get these Prussian Lutherans located in the Buffalo, New York area, and also in the Milwaukee-Freistadt area. So you've got two very geographically separated settlements. But because Krause has gone back to America, they've only got one pastor. All right. So this presents problems when the one pastor, Grabo, stays in Buffalo and there's no pastor out there in Wisconsin. So what are they going to do? Well, they decide that they'd better take some steps to make sure that they continue to have word and sacrament in their midst. And so they appoint one of their own. And I'm thinking he was a layman, but maybe he's a teacher, somebody who's got the respect of the congregation. And they ask him to fill in. Well, when this comes to Grabo's attention, he says, oh no, this is no good. You can't do this. You have to have an ordained man. And if an unordained man starts to do the Lord's Supper, he's only administering bread and wine. You don't have body and blood. So he's very upset about this. And he writes up a pastor's letter, a shepherd's letter in German, this Hirtenbrief, about why he thinks the arrangement in Wisconsin had been wrong and they shouldn't have done it. And he shares this with the Saxons. And the Saxon reaction to Grabau's Hirtenbrief is negative. They think that Grabau has said more about the pastoral office, more about ordination, than you can validly say on the basis of the Bible and even the Lutheran confessions. So there is a theological conversation and dispute, even before the Missouri Synod is founded, developing between the Prussian leader, Grabau, and the Saxon pastors, Walther, Lober, Keil, and others. Okay. Meanwhile, Krause actually does come back. And he actually comes back with a few more families. But he doesn't stay in Buffalo, where the bulk of the Silesians have settled. He goes over to Wisconsin, and then he becomes the pastor of those congregations that are located in Milwaukee and Freistadt. So we now do have two pastors. We've got Grabau in Buffalo, and we have Krause in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, however, in Buffalo, the Silesians have settled there alongside Grabau's Prussians, at least the ones that haven't moved to Wisconsin. And Grabau continues to be concerned about the Silesians. They remain unrepentant for their sin against the Australian ship captain. And as a result of their unrepentance, Grabau ends up excommunicating them. So we have excommunicated Silesians living in Buffalo, and we also have Grabau and his Prussians in a congregation. This is the situation when in Missouri, the Saxons have gotten rid of Stefan and have become concerned about church and ministry and all the things that afflicted them at that time, as a result of which one of their pastors, a fellow by the name of Moritz Berger, and one of their leading laymen, a fellow by the name of Adolf Marbach, decide that they are going back home to Germany. But for whatever reason, and I don't understand enough about how they traveled in these days, their way home to Missouri took them through Buffalo. And I think it was the Great Lakes Canal system that took them to Buffalo. And from there, they would get the Erie Canal and then down the Hudson, Atlantic, and get a boat and go across the Atlantic. I think that that's the route. But it's either Marbach or Berger was also carrying some correspondence from some of the Saxons to some of the people in Buffalo. And so they got involved with the Lutherans there. And they heard a little bit about this fight. When the Silesians heard that there was a pastor in Buffalo, a Lutheran pastor who didn't have a congregation, they approached him, that's Berger, about whether he would serve them as their pastor. Now, remember, they'd been excommunicated by Grabau. Well, Berger, okay, he takes calls seriously. He's not going to, but he also takes excommunication very seriously. So he goes over to Grabau, and Grabau is friendly and shows him the records of why they'd had to excommunicate the Silesians. And Berger is kind of okay with that, so he's thinking about this. But Berger is very, very poor, and he has children with him. And so when one of the Silesians, one of the members in that group, offers to house Berger and his family while he's there thinking about this call, Grabau gets very upset. For him, this is like breaking the discipline of excommunication. You're not supposed to have anything to do with the excommunicated people. And so Grabau is alienated from Berger. Berger's dander gets up over this accusation. And to make a long story short, I guess I haven't made it that short, but anyway, to make a long story, to end a long story, Berger accepts the call to the excommunicated half of Grabau's church. So we end up with two confessional Lutheran churches in Buffalo, one basically the Prussians, the other basically the Silesians, and The man who's pastoring the Silesians is a Saxon. And so when the Missouri Synod begins, he begins, along with his congregation, to be charter members of the Missouri Synod. But as you can imagine, Berger has alienated from Grabau. Grabau then becomes upset with him. He's already upset with the Saxons, who have said that his Hirten Brief goes beyond the bounds of good confessional Lutheranism. And so when the Missouri Synod begins, they end up with basically inheriting a fight that had begun over these issues, both in Wisconsin and in Buffalo. So that's kind of point one about the confessional Lutherans.
And we need to take a quick break here. We have more to talk about after this break. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon, whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan. You'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with Dr. Cameron McKenzie about some of the interesting things that happened during the formation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, some of the fights that were going on at this time. And you were talking about the Prussians and the Silesians. Is there anything else with that story that you'd like to tell us?
Yes, there's really a whole lot more to tell you, because it's a fight that's ongoing. When the Missouri Synod gets to it, it keeps ongoing. And the Missouri Synod held that the problem was fundamentally doctrinal, and that Grabau was attributing to the pastoral office more than it actually held. Instead of simply being the authority of the word and the sacrament, Grabau was holding that it had authority over other things, that you had to obey the pastor. The horse and buggy thing would be a good example of that, where the congregation, I guess we did that in a previous episode, where the pastor insisted the congregation pay for a horse and buggy, and they said they weren't. So that was Pastor Krause, and so he excommunicates them. So the Missouri Synod saw this as a theological problem. Grabau saw it as a question of Saxons pastoring people under discipline. So that was a practical problem. This was something that pastors, this was behavioral problem. So they were unable to kind of reach any meeting of the minds on this question in the initial years. And so you have at each convention of the new groups, Buffalo Synod and Missouri Synod, actions being taken with respect to the most recent accusations from the other group. And this finally culminated when the Buffalo Synod, that's the Grabau group, ends up excommunicating the entire Missouri Synod, and it kind of brings that to an unhappy conclusion, at least for a short time. This is in the mid-1850s that this happens. But so much else is going on in American Lutheranism at the time that it's not the full story. And as a matter of fact, there are a number of pastors and congregations in the Buffalo Synod who themselves have come to the conclusion that Grabau is acting in this high-handed dictatorial way. And so the Buffalo Synod suffers a split. And the majority of the Buffalo Synod leaves the Buffalo Synod. Most of those go into the Missouri Synod. Some of them end up going into the Wisconsin Synod. And subsequently, the Wisconsin Synod and the Missouri Synod are in fellowship. So the Buffalo Synod goes forward in its history as really quite a small group of people who remain loyal to Grabau and to positions. But in those early years, it really becomes the occasion for the Missouri Synod to articulate its understanding of the doctrines of the church, what constitutes the church, and its office of the ministry. And essentially, what the Missouri Synod confessed in agreement with the confessions was that the church is the assembly of those who gather around word and sacrament. It's not just kind of any old gathering of Christians, but Christians gathered about word and sacrament. And that these groups are fully the church and then have all the rights of the church, including that of calling pastors. So pastors get their job, so to speak, by God calling them through the church. And the church essentially is congregations gathered around word and sacrament. So even to this day, our understanding of the Missouri Synod, when it calls somebody, it's calling somebody because the congregations of the synod are acting together to call. So Walter articulated his doctrine of church and ministry, and this was subscribed to by the entire Missouri Synod. And so even to this day, the controversy with the Buffalo Synod that led to the articulation of the doctrines of church and ministry remain the official position of the Missouri Synod. So the Buffalo Synod controversy doesn't amount to a whole lot in the long run because Buffalo becomes rather quite small, but doctrinally it's important because it moved Walter to articulate this doctrine as we still hold and teach it today.
I think earlier you mentioned the Iowa Synod. I know we don't have a lot of time, but maybe just a point or two about the Iowa Synod before we wrap up our time together today.
Yeah, that would be good. Now, Leah got involved in this controversy with Missouri because both Walther and Grabau went back to Germany to kind of plead their case with the confessional Lutherans over there. And Leah tried to take kind of a middle position, sympathizing with Missouri over the practical problems, but sympathizing with Grabau over the theological problems. And this turned out to be maybe more serious than Leah thought it was going to be, because as it turned out, the Missouri Synod held that when the Bible taught something, that was a doctrine. Even if other Lutherans didn't see it yet, that was a doctrine. Leah had kind of a funny attitude. Something didn't become a doctrine until there had been a fight over it. And as a result of the fight, clarity was reached about the doctrine. So for Leah, this doctrine of the ministry was one that the two sides kind of should tolerate within each other. Furthermore, this whole attitude toward doctrine led to another issue. It's called the issue of open questions. And open questions, well, are they questions about which we have not reached a confessional conclusion, or are they questions about which the scriptures don't give us a clear answer? And it's that second position, which was the Missouri position. Furthermore, in early 1850s, Leah sent over a pastor, professor, to start a teacher's college, teacher's seminary, up in Michigan, Saginaw, Michigan. And this man joined the Missouri Synod Church, but he taught this other doctrine of church and ministry, different from the Missouri Synod and different from his own pastor. So that became a dispute and squabble, as a result of which the then president of the Missouri Synod, F.C.D. Wienicken, had to go up there and try to create peace. And he ended up saying to the more recent Leah man, maybe you and your followers ought to move to Iowa so that we don't have competing views of what Lutheranism is here in Michigan. Well, they did, and they went off to Iowa, and they formed their own new synod. But this new synod was founded on this other view of the Lutheran confessions, namely that if a doctrine is there because it's been fought over and articulated, that's a doctrine, but there are others that are still open questions that have not yet been fully resolved. So in the Iowa Synod, not only church and ministry, but also things like whether you had to, whether you could work on a Sunday or not, whether you could hold to the millennium or not, all of those were open questions. And so the Iowa Synod is kind of a late foundation by laymen who have a different view of the confessions, different view of open questions. And again, they become kind of an alternative to the Missouri Synod's view of confessional Lutheranism.
Perhaps to wrap up this series, maybe a point or two about what you think we can learn from all this history that's most valuable today, or that would be most useful to us.
Sure. When I teach this, I try to emphasize two things about the Missouri Synod from its beginning, and that is the necessity for doctrinal purity, that we have to be faithful to what God has revealed in the Scriptures, and that means true doctrine. And you really see that in people like C.F.W. Walther and those early fights in the Missouri Synod with other church bodies. But the other thing that you see in the history of the Missouri Synod is the purpose for true doctrine, and that is gospel proclamation. And we see that in people like Winniken and Kramer and those first mission projects, even Leah and the laymen, that the purity of the gospel is for the sake of proclamation, that we bring it to bear on the lives of real, honest to goodness people, all of whom are sinners, all of whom need to know the Savior, and they need to know the Savior according to God's revelation in the Scriptures. So that's what pure doctrine is all about. Maybe you remember from years back, President Barry, now in heaven, he used to put it this way: keep the doctrine straight, Missouri, get the doctrine out, Missouri. And that's what I think our history teaches us. That really is what the Missouri Synod is all about. Doctrinal purity, yes, but for the sake of gospel proclamation. So that's what I'd like to bring as a result of our study of this history.
Our guest for this series has been the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. McKenzie, thanks so much for dedicating so much time to helping us learn this great history.
Thank you very much for having me. I did really enjoy it. I hope we can do some more on something else some other time. Thanks.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.